Hello, I'm Hayley Hayes, and it's a pleasure to have you join us for another episode of the Radio Academy podcast. The highest honour the Radio Academy may give upon a member of the radio industry in the UK is a fellowship of the Academy. Our esteemed Radio Academy Managing Director, Aradhna Tale Lynch, takes a seat with Sheena Mason, Deputy Content Director at Magic. It's the third instalment in our series where we introduce you to the four recently appointed Radio Academy Fellows. Without further ado, let's dive into this wonderful conversation between Aradhna and Sheena.
Thanks, Sheena, so much for joining us, and congratulations on becoming a fellow of the Radio Academy.
Thank you. Yeah, it was quite a surprise on the day. I wasn't kind of expecting it at all. There was a bit of subterfuge going on behind the scenes to get me there and get me in the room, as I was being quite belligerent that I wanted to go and watch Rebecca Frank do her speech in the room next door, but I was being told, no, you have to come in here first. So it was quite the surprise. It suddenly dawned on me when Ben Cooper was speaking that, oh, that's me he's talking about. Yes, it was a very well planned behind the scenes.
We were so delighted, and I was blown away just listening to Ben talk about how much you've achieved and the steps you'd taken. How does it feel kind of hearing your achievements told back to you, especially when you don't initially realise they're talking about you?
Yeah, I think sometimes you're so caught up in what you're doing in the here and now that you don't really think back to things you've done. And I think sometimes it's only like in the office when you sort of say, oh yeah, I remember back when this happened, or we did this, or there was this event, that it's only those little moments, I think, that you suddenly think, oh yeah, because you know in your day-to-day you're busy and you're getting on with what you're doing now, that you're not really thinking back to, oh, I did this, or thinking back to Capital Days when we did Party in the Park and working with the team putting on that. And you think, wow, when you look back now, you're like, wow, that was, it was 100,000 people in Hyde Park. That was a huge thing. And even just working with presenters, it was funny afterwards. I got some really lovely messages from people, some people I hadn't spoken to, I hadn't seen for 4 years, that just sent me really lovely messages that, again, you just think, oh yeah, I remember working with them, or just sort of sharing little stories with you. So it's a lot when you think back, it does accumulate up, but it's sort of, when you listed it out and I was thinking, oh yeah, that's me. It's sort of, it's not something you would do yourself, I think. So it's nice to have that kind of recognition from one of your peers.
I really think that's a nice thing that you said about it being an opportunity to reconnect with people as well, and not just look back on your achievements, but look back on those connections that you've made.
Because I think the other thing is that it's really important to me is that, yes, I've achieved all those things, but that wasn't me, on my own, sort of like being, oh, aren't I great? It's always about the team of people that you work with on any particular project, whether it's like the team I work with now at Magic, or back when I was at Capital, or when we've done events. It's always that thing of, I remember with some of the events that we used to do, I didn't really know a lot about events, and it was learning from those people who were generous with their time and knowledge to help you along the way and say, this is how things work and this is how we do things. And that's how I think you build up your kind of skill set as well. Of, I remember when I first started at Capital, I remember going to Richard Park and saying, I need to learn how to edit. And he said, right, well, the best editors are the news team, so go and find Justin Kings, go and find Gareth Roberts, and ask them to teach you. And I did go and ask them, and they both very generously said, yeah, we'll show you. And that's how I kind of learned to edit. I mean, this is way before the times of student radio and all the skills that you can learn before you get into the industry. So I was very lucky that I had a lot of people that I worked with that were generous, as I say, with time and skills and knowledge, that shared that with me to help me kind of build my skill set up.
What was it that drew you into the industry, into working with music, and specifically going into radio?
So music was my love. Music was always my passion from sort of very early age. So, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to schedule the music, and my aim was to become a head of music. That's kind of what I love doing. And that's sort of, I started off kind of copying CDs for the Capital Radio Cafe way back when that was around, doing that. So that was kind of my starting point. And then I just kind of built up from there, and took part in and sort of playlists, and then got to work with the artists when they were coming in to do interviews and things. So yeah, it was love of music really that was kind of my passion.
How has the industry changed, you know, from that first love of music and playing with the CDs? What kind of trends have you been following?
So I think it's funny for the people who I work with now, who are some of them a lot younger, when I say when I started there was no email. There was no social media. There was, you know, to enter a competition, you faxed in your from your workplace, you faxed in. Things have changed, and, you know, the audio landscape has changed. You know, there wasn't podcasts, and it was very much you focused on the radio output on FM, and that's what it was. So I think those changes and how the audio landscape has changed and sort of progressed, and there's more ways to consume that now, and then how the, you know, the social media side lends into that as well. So you've got those things to think about now. It's not just necessarily the output of what you put on the radio. So I think those are the big changes, and obviously play out in the studio. You know, we used to have the CDs in denon cases and cart walls, and now everything is kind of play out systems and more sort of technologically mobile. So I think, you know, huge advances and huge changes in that kind of audio landscape.
How have you lent into those evolutions and those technical advances? I mean, you've really brought magic above and beyond. In 2021 you won Station of the Year at the ARIAs, you oversee the Magic Musicals, you've repeatedly won awards on commercial partnerships as well. So you're obviously really leaning into that technology. How do you keep that passion for the music at the centre of it and the artists, and then use all of the different formats and different outlets to be able to enforce that?
I think, again, it goes back to that sort of teamwork, you know, on that commercial side. It's working with our commercial teams here and having the ideas and then bringing that to life with the commercial partners of what's their idea and how can we do something slightly different that hasn't been done before, like, you know, the Euro Song Station that we did that was, you know, around sort of Eurovision and the Netflix film that came out. So again, it's working really closely with those teams to make sure we're delivering that side of it. I think just on the sort of launching the digital station, so we've got Chilled and Musicals and Soul and Mellow. So again, working with Tony Morey, who was the content director at the time, really having clear plans of what we wanted to do with those stations. And Tony was always one for pushing the boundaries. So that was more him kind of going, here's an idea. What can we do? How do we do this? And I was more the solutions problem solver person of saying, here's a template. Here's an idea. Right. Let's put the two things together. How do we make this work? So again, I think it comes back to that using the skills of the people who are around you and making, you know, having the best people in the best positions to kind of help move that forward. So with all those stations, you know, Musicals was a station I really wanted to launch for quite a time because I was like, you know there's an audience out there, and we do our big Magic at the Musicals event, and I knew there was an audience out there because of a lot of the commercial things that we did as well around Musicals always got a good reaction from listeners. So kept pushing and pushing, saying we need to do a musical station, and eventually they said, yep, okay, fine, you can do it. I think we pulled it together in about 2.5 weeks in the end. It was a bit of a labor of love, and unfortunately we launched it just before COVID when all the theatre shut, so it wasn't the best timing. But since then, you know, it's come back, and now, you know, our radio numbers on that station are really growing over the last three books. So it's really good to see that the, you know, the team that work on that, James, Sarah, do a great job on the kind of day-to-day with that, with all the presenters as well, in really kind of coming up with the ideas and going, how do we move that station forward? How do we get it out there to new audiences?
With so many new stations and digital platforms launching under the Magic brand, what's it like behind the scenes? How do you work together across the teams to keep that consistent brand whilst keeping your different station identities?
So we have sort of different people who work on those individual brands, you know, on each individual station, so that, you know, again, as I say, there's a kind of clarity on each of those brands. And that's, you know, there's a music scheduler that works with James Curran and Ben Wolford on the kind of music side of it. And then, you know, the production team as well in terms of the imaging for that station. But then, you know, it's always making sure that those stations filter into the main station. You know, if you do like musicals, then you might come in through musicals, but then we'd like you to listen to the main station as well. So making sure we've got that kind of cross-pollination from those digital stations into the main station. And then we've got the team that everybody that works on the digital station also kind of works on the main station as well. So it's a network of people, you know, but it's everybody working together. And I think also the other great thing is you don't have to work on that station specifically to have an idea idea, if somebody comes up and says, oh, hey, do you know what? I've got an idea for chilled, or I've got an idea for soul. It's not just, oh, it has to be somebody at a higher level who has the kind of idea. So if somebody comes with an idea, we can go, hey, that's a, you know, let's see, does that work? Could we do that? Does that fit with what we want for that station?
How do you help support and develop people coming in? And what kind of skills are you looking for now as we've evolved?
I think when people come in, they're a lot more skilled than I was probably when I started, because there's a lot more out there now for them to kind of learn with student radio before they kind of get into the industry. So they're a little bit more savvy than I would have been when I started. I think it's just always good to be someone that people can come and talk to and ask advice from, without kind of saying, well, this is how we do it, and just do it like that. It's very much kind of, there's a problem, how can I help you find the solution to the problem, or how can I help you to move forward with the project? And trying to give people the confidence to use their skills and have a voice, I think is the important thing, rather than it just being do as you're told. And sometimes you do need to say, please, can you just get this done, because it needs doing. But I think it's just showing that encouragement and trying to help people progress with their skills. Again, kind of when I started, you know, it was a bit more of, you could do a little bit more of everything across the board. Whereas I think now, because of the way the industry's gone, it has to be a little bit more focused on particular areas. So I think it's just being there and you know, knowing people, knowing that they can come and talk to you and just have a chat, whether it's your experience they're looking for or just help with a certain problem.
What do you think really makes a radio show or a podcast stand out today, when there's so much choice for people to find the music that they want?
I think it's tough getting that kind of share of voice in the market. As you say, there is so much out there, and you know, it's sort of quite funny. Everyone talks about, you know, that thing of, we all need our own carpool karaoke, you know, where's our thing that's going to stand out? And it is difficult to get that, because you need that longevity and repeatable format of something to really cut through with your audience. I think one of the things that we did very well during COVID was that connectivity with the audience, being relatable to them, and, you know, our presenters sort of sharing they were going through the same thing as well. I think you know, if you really want cut through, and certainly in that the podcast market, you've got to find, where's your niche? Where's the thing that you're doing that's not the same as everybody else? You know, if I'm looking up a particular topic on a podcast, I'm going to find 5, 6, 7. So what is it that's going to draw me to your one that's slightly different from something that's already out there in the market? But as you say, it's really difficult to get that cut through in terms of finding something really unique that hasn't already been covered.
Do you have any advice for people who are looking to get into the industry, and also those people who might have been working for a couple of years, just struggling to get into a permanent position or a producer role?
I think, again, one of the things is, what's going to make you stand out from somebody else? And I don't mean putting a jazzy thing on your CV and, you know, sort of a pretty picture on the top or whatever, that people are going to go, oh, look at that. I think a few things is, if you are applying for a job, it's like, make sure you've read the job description, that you're putting the key skills that people are looking for at the top of either your CV or your covering letter, because you're going to be one of 40, 50, 60, 100 CVs. So if someone's skipping through those and they're looking for the person and the key skills, make sure they're top of the first thing I'm going to be reading, that I can say, oh yes, this person fits the criteria of the job that I'm looking to fill. Also, and this surprises me every time when people applying for jobs at the a radio station, is, make sure you've listened to the radio station, and not yesterday, but, you know, if you're applying for a job, just listen to a bit from then, make some notes. What are the things you like about it? What are the things you don't like about it? What are the things that, you know, what audience are they going for? Go and check out their website, find a little bit about the radio station that you're going for. It never surprises me when you're interviewing people that sometimes they say, oh yeah, yeah, I've listened to a bit, and they'll recount something that happened the day before, but they don't really know the station. And, you know, just with the knowledge, the information's all out there now. So make sure that you've got a little bit of background of the station that you're kind of going for, so that, you know, the person interviewing you kind of knows, you know, what you're talking about. Yeah, and I think experience, it's, and I know it's really difficult, because the certainly on the radio side, the kind of industry's got a little bit smaller, but try and get that experience of going in and just seeing what it's like in community radio, hospital radio. See if you can get some experience of actually doing that, because that'll stand you in kind of good stead.
For those of us that don't know, Tina, tell us, what does a deputy content director do?
So a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It's pulling together all the different areas, I guess, to make sure everything kind of goes out on air consistently. I do a lot of the commercial content side as well, so meeting with the commercial team, and also a lot of admin side as well in terms of budgets and stuff like that. I'm kind of, you know, overseeing, keep an eye across that, so that, you know, Rachel, who's the content director, can kind of look at the more strategic level stuff and kind of be a bit more kind of overseeing of, you know, the bigger picture of things. It's really kind of jumping in, you know, at the moment I'm working on The Magic of Christmas, so I'm leading that, and our 100% Christmas, which we'll go 100 when we'll be playing all the Christmas songs, just working on the content for the launch of that and what we'll be doing with that. So it's really kind of a bit of a coordinator kind of role, pulling everybody together to make sure that everyone's on the same page and doing, you know, doing what they should be doing.
Sheena, you've just been awarded the Radio Academy's highest honour. What does this mean for you, and what's next for you?
It's a real honour for me, because I think people who know me know I'm not one of those who sort of puts myself at the forefront. It kind of scares me quite a bit, sort of having to get up on the stage or do that kind of thing. So it's a real kind of honour to be, just have that kind of acknowledgement from your peers, and just to have that acknowledgement of what you've done. So, you know, when you look, it's funny because afterwards I was like, oh, I wonder who else is on the list, and, you know, sort of scroll through the list, and you sort of do a bit of a, oh, wow, okay. You know, because it's a very notable list of people. As I said, you know, it's not something that you sort of really think of when you're doing your job. You're not doing it for the awards or the kind of, you know, that side of it. You're doing it for kind of the love and the enjoyment, and to kind of, you know, put a bit of a smile on your listeners' faces kind of thing. So, you know, it was a very, very special moment for me. I do see my job now as kind of bringing the next generation along kind of thing, and kind of, you know, I only ever wanted to be a kind of head of music, and I've done that at Capital and I've done that at Magic, and I still want to keep going and learn, you know. The guys in the office are always on at me about social media and, you know, getting me a bit more up to speed on things, because I'm always a little bit behind, which they always find quite amusing. But, you know, it's really kind of, you know, when I started, you know, there was a wonderful lady called Annie O'Neill, who was Chris Tarrant's producer, who kind of took me under her wing a little bit, because there weren't many women in the sort of in certainly on the programming side at that time. And so she kind of was a bit of a, you know, a mentor to me. So I kind of feel, you know, that's kind of a little bit my role now, to bring through the next lot of people.
Oh, brilliant. Well, we're really lucky to have you. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you on TikTok soon. It's been really lovely to speak to you. Thanks so much.
Big thanks to Sheena for her time today. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to the Radio Academy podcast so you don't miss an episode. We have one last Meet the Fellow conversation coming up in this series. It's with Matt Deegan, and it will be published in the next few days. I'll catch you then.